Welcome everyone to the Macro Hive week ahead. Dominique, how are you?
Very well, thank you, Ben. I see that you are all dressed up for the London summer.
Oh, honestly, it's freezing. Well, it's not freezing. It's cold and it's wet. It's about
Ooh.
the most British summer. I'm sure it's very different in LA.
Well, believe it or not, early in the morning, LA is cold and foggy.
So it sounds a bit British, but let's leave the weather behind. We've got plenty to discuss from this week. It's finally August. We've had Trump's tariff delay or his delayed tariff data come through. We've had the Fed. We've had some key data points, and they've quite fortunately been market moving. It's been interesting this week. So I think let's jump straight in and address the Fed. We had, I think it's fair to say, some healthy disagreement with clients. They seemed to be leaning the same way as markets, which was that Fed cuts in the near term, at least, were less likely than they were before the Fed. Now, obviously, your take, as we'll go through now, was pretty much in disagreement with that. So, I mean, can we jump straight in and just understand what was your take from the Fed pre any of the data that we've had today? So, before the NFP data, what was your read
So
of
my
the
read
Fed?
was that the Fed had turned dovish, and the read was just based on the transcript. If you compared what Powell said this week relative to June, so this week he mentioned six times in a 45-minute press conference downside risk to the labor market. If you search the transcript of June, of the June FOMC, there is not a single mention of downside risk to the labor market. Also, his assessment of inflation risk was much more benign. Just look at the introductory statement. This week, he said his base case was we would see an increase in the price level rather than an increase, a lasting increase in inflation. In June, he gave equal weight. The price level increase was definitely not his base case. And then he made comments on wages coming down to a level consistent with the Fed target. He said that he wasn't sure firms would have the pricing power to pass on the cost increases. What else? He was also, he also took note of the data. I mean, the hard, uncon I mean, clear data on growth. We've had a slowdown to about 1% in the first half from 2.5% in the second half.
And
What else?
is that what's triggered his base case sort of conviction to go from potentially there could be inflationary pressures to basically this is just about a change in price levels? Is this what's triggered it?
But it's also the price data where you see clearly that tariff goods prices are going up, but nothing is happening to non-tariff goods, which is a big difference with the 2017 tariff. And Powell discussed it. He talked about the price of dryers going up in 2017, even though they were not tariff, but because the price of washers had gone up, businesses took advantage to sneak in an increase in the price of dryers. He said, "We're not seeing that, not seeing a lot of that. We don't see a lot of that." These were his exact words. So if you just listen to what he said, the tone of the presser had clearly changed, which, by the way, senior officials, so the president, I think the Fed, the head chair of the Fed, very few people get advance release of the employment report. So it's possible that he had it before the press conference. I mean, he would not have been able to share it with the FOMC members, of course. But, he looks vindicated by today's print.
And I mean, just touching on that, obviously going into the meeting, there was a there seemed to be a clear separation, or do you think there's a clear separation on the borders? And there was very much the Bowman-Waller camp, which was the Fed should probably be cutting, and then the market basically took the rest of the Fed as, look, they don't really want to cut right now. But do you think that's fair?
No, I think the market is too focused on the theatrics, of the White House trying to dictate to the Fed and not focused enough on the fact. In fact, there isn't much of a gap between Waller and Bowman and the FOMC. Again, if you read what the respective parties are saying, they all agree that the
U.S.
labor.
S&P Global July manufacturing PMI at 49.8 versus 52.9 prior.
Not good. They all agree that the core problem is the labor market balance is balanced for the wrong reason because labor supply is slowing, and that the stability of the unemployment is hiding underlying weaknesses. They all agree on that. What they disagree on is whether they should cut now or in 6 weeks. The median FOMC voter wanted to wait 6 weeks, but honestly, it's not going to make a difference, especially since the Fed always has the option of cutting 50 basis points in
And
six weeks.
just to clear things up, before the data, but just after the Fed, your base case was for another, well, was for 2 to 3 more cuts starting in September, right?
Yes. And 25 basis point in September, based on unemployment staying in the current range around 4.1%. If unemployment moves another 20 basis point, and there are other signs of weaknesses in labor demand, I think they could very well cut 50. If, on the other hand, I'm totally wrong, the economy starts roaring back between now and September, and the unemployment rate falls through 4%, they won't cut. The other conditions for a cut are a stable long-term inflation expectation. I mean, if you think of central banking as a business, the most valuable part of the franchise is credibility. And long-term inflation expectation is basically what measures credibility. So that's important too. And then we need to continue to have this pattern of price and wage increase where we have no acceleration in wage inflation, because this is where, this is if we are in a bad scenario, again, I'm wrong, and the price increase we are seeing now translate in a broad-based increase in inflation, we will see it through wages. That's how it will get transmitted, because workers will get aggressive, demand bigger wage increases, businesses will try to pass it on to consumers. So we'll get a bit of a feedback loop between wages and prices. So the other condition for a cut is no feedback loop, and of course, no inflation contagion from tariff to non-tariff goods.
And I think this probably brings us quite nicely on to yesterday's data. We have PC practically in line with expectations. Of course, the Fed, oh no, not the Fed, the market modeled that absolutely lovely. They get CPI, they get PPI. So at that stage, it's more of a confirmation than anything. However, it seemed like the interesting data point was that spending was a bit weaker than expected, and but income was actually a touch stronger than expected. What did you make of that data?
So I made that the savings rate was unchanged and higher than 6 months ago, significantly higher. And this is really important because if you think of the economy as an ecosystem, so you have the business side that's producing stuff, selling stuff, and paying workers, and workers recycle part of what they get paid by businesses in the economy through their purchases of goods and services. And how much gets recycled depends on the household savings rate. And with the administration unpredictable policies, we've had a big increase in precautionary savings, which, besides the slowdown in immigration, is the other factor dragging down growth. So what we had yesterday was data showing that, people remain a bit fearful. They're not spending as much. And also the interesting story was that the gains in income were completely erased by inflation. So we had a 30 basis point increase in nominal income, which was erased by a 30 basis point increase, a roughly 30 basis point increase in CPI.
And the fact that, so I'm just thinking out loud here, the fact that households are practically accumulating some money in their bank, they're saving more and more. Are we going to have something similar to the Fed hiking cycle last time, where basically the Fed argued for a long time that the reason households weren't feeling the brunt of hikes was they had practically loads of accumulated savings from COVID. Do you think that will happen, or do you think something similar to that can happen in 2026, i.e., look, Mark, the uncertainty around tariffs could go a bit lower. The Fed have cut a bit. Okay, they've actually got this bank of savings now to use. Do you see a risk of that coming into 2026, or is the savings, the amount they've accumulated, is just isn't that big?
So I was never comfortable with this idea of savings because it means that you know in real time what is the desired savings of household, which we don't know. I found a much better indicator of savings. I actually wrote about this, is the cost of life necessities. Basically, the idea behind my indicator is that a lot of households cannot afford to save because once they've paid for food, lodging, transportation, basically there's nothing left. And so there is a really good statistical correlation between the savings rate and the cost of life necessities. So, I mean, the risk, to my view, comes much more would come much more from a recovery in confidence. That suddenly people get used to this very unpredictable policy, tariff policy we have, and they don't care. And they start spending more. It's not my base case scenario, but it's definitely a risk.
And talking of tariffs, obviously today, 1st of August, that's Trump's delayed tariff date. I think tariffs are going to land somewhere in the region, the effective tariff rate of what, 15 to 16%. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, how does that sort of play into your medium-term view for the US economy and the Fed?
Well, it keeps growth weak for three reasons. First of all, we haven't seen the hit to manufacturing, but it's coming. I keep repeating economic time is slower than market time, but it's true. It takes time for people to order their stuff, adjust their production schedule, sell, build up inventories. This is a month, not, adjusting at the speed of light as in markets. The other thing that it's going to do, the price, even though the price level increase is unlikely to turn into an inflation rate increase, I completely agree with the FOMC. It's still going to make everybody poorer. Basically, you'll have to pay more to buy stuff. So that's going to deprice consumption. And the bigger effect is the increase in uncertainty, lifting precautionary savings. I see this as a more lasting impact because if you look at the so-called trade deals we've had, it looks like a handshake between my president and the president or head of governments of our trading partners. I mean, trade deals take years to negotiate because the devil is in the details. You have a lot of institutional details that make a big difference to the outcome. But we've had kind of a sweeping broad tariff rates. Then we have people coming to the White House to see President Trump and negotiating exemptions. Then you have President Trump, using tariff threats for foreign policy, for instance, the threat of secondary sanctions on countries that buy Russian oil. So there is no sense of where policy is headed. In fact, Bilal interviewed Brad Setzer last week's podcast, and he made very, in my view, very valid points that there is a case for tariff and industrial policy to revive US manufacturing. So I agree. But what Setzer said was that, the tariff need to be gradual, predictable, and strategic, and we're not seeing any of that. So any long-term impact of positive impact of tariff, in my view, are greatly diminished by the sort of seat of the pants policy making that we are seeing at the moment. And that also has negative impact for demand growth because people are fearful and not spending as much.
Oh, 100%. It feels like his tariffs, at least the deals, the thing you're seeing is that the country that he's going to tariff are basically saying, look, we don't want a tariff rate as high as you have threatened us. And then Trump goes, okay, well, what can you offer us to get this down? And basically they go, okay, look, we can give you easier access to our markets, which Trump has wanted all along. And okay, we might buy some more stuff from you. Obviously, Europe committed to huge energy buying, and other nations have done similar. And at the same time, there's been some scenarios like Japan who have basically committed to, albeit there's disagreements about what they've really committed to, but they've agreed to invest in the US in some form. But it just feels
So,
it
no,
gone.
100%. I mean, the fact that the trade partners are not clear on what they have agreed to gives you a sense of the confusion that we are dealing with. And then this thing of investing in the US. So, how does that play out for the dollar? I mean, so the dollar appreciates, but the balance of payment has to be balanced, right? If we have a change in the goods flow, it has to be matched by an equivalent change in capital flow. So again, confusion is supreme here. And I think there is a fundamental misunderstanding in the administration's policy, which, by the way, is a great pity because I think they have the right motivation. But an expansion in manufacturing is not going to lift employment. What it's going to lift is the production of robots, some of which are imported because we still have to rebuild that magnificent robot producing sector. So, bottom line, a lot of noise, confusion still very high, and demand and CapEx, especially, likely to remain depressed with negative implication for long-term productivity trends.
Now let's go on to the last thing for this week. NFP. Somehow we've left it 20, 25 minutes before we've managed to come on to this. Was seemingly on, to be honest, on the headline, NFP didn't actually seem so bad. There was a small miss, not that big of a miss, let's say. Unemployment practically came in line with expectation, and wages were practically in line. However, there was a ginormous revision. I think the second largest on record. And the largest outside of the COVID period. What did you make of it? Markets are rallying 20 basis points in the front end. They're clearly pricing back in some Fed cuts. What are you making of it? And are the details as dovish as the revision and the market are taking it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the NFP vindicates Powell's and the FOMC view that the labor market stability, which is basically the unemployment rate, which has been stable, so tells you that labor supply and demand have been balanced. That stability is hiding weaknesses because the stability reflects weaker labor supply rather than stronger labor demand. And that's, if you look at details, I was, for instance, so the fact that wage growth roughly constant or telling detail was the increase in the spread of African American unemployment over Caucasian unemployment. That spread goes up during recession, and over the past few months there have been a very clear, very significant increase. Hours work not increasing, Participation is falling, average participation is falling very fast, which again reflects the fact that since the administration is not letting in any migrants, and since migrants, undocumented migrants who are already in the US are afraid to show up to work, what you are seeing is an increase in the role of native workers, so American-born workers, and they are aging. I mean, the boomers have been retiring. So in November, last November, I predicted that for this reason, NFP would fall below 100,000. Basically, the demographics reassert themselves. And I was a bit ahead of the curve, too far ahead of the curve, but it's finally happening. This is not a great number, even though, as you say, the shortfall is not that shocking.
And do you think the Fed need the unemployment rate going up to say 4.3 or more, well, let's say a crazy number, 4.4, 4.5 to cut 50? Or could a contraction in NFP, but say the unemployment rate just ticks up, would that be enough? As in, would a contraction in NFP be enough for them to go for 50 in September? Or do you think it sort of has to be reflected in the unemployment rate as well?
You mean a negative payroll with
Yeah, I mean,
constant?
last month's revised NFP was own was what, 14K? It's flirting with the idea of
Yeah.
a negative print.
So again, I'm going to quote Chair Powell, not maliciously in any way, but because I think he's saying exactly the right thing. They look at the totality of the data and its implication for the outlook. So you can't, there is not a simple one-to-one relationship between NFP and what the Fed will do. But gosh, if we get a negative print and the other details of the release are soft, yeah, I mean, there's no reason for them not to go 50.
And I know your base case is for a September cut. And other markets are pretty much in line with that. Before we started recording, I think it was sat around 80% for a September cut. But if things came out the other side, so let's say unemployment remained in line with expectations, but NFP was strong, the market probably would have been happy to price out more of a Fed cut, i.e., they would have gone from, say, a 40% chance to, let's say, 30% chance. And I feel like the doves in the world would have said, okay, look, this is just one data point. Let's wait for the next NFP release. Do you think we do have to wait for the next NFP release before we cement our ideas of a September cut? Or do you think we've basically got enough evidence now? And like, it'll take something pretty strong from the next NFP, the next CPI release to convince the Fed or to move expectations in the market.
So again, it's not just going to be the size of the NFP. I agree. Actually, one of our investors told me that, what if the unemployment is stable, but you have a big increase in NFP? So that would make it less likely for the Fed to cut. But again, they are looking at the whole data set. So they will be looking for confirmation outside of the labor market that the economy is picking up. So they will be looking at retail sales, consumption, indicators of aggregate demand. And if suddenly, the economy, I'm wrong, the economy finds a second wind and growth starts speaking up, yeah, I mean, the cut would be on hold. I mean, it's not my base case, but definitely a risk. As I said, if, for instance, businesses and consumers regain their mojo, they've decided they are going to block the policy noise and spend, spend, spend. Yeah, that would give the Fed pause.
Now, talking of data releases and what they're going to be watching, we've got a much quieter calendar next week versus this week. We have really standing out with services, ISM and claims, and obviously there's some speakers. What are you looking for, both from the data side and the speaker side next week?
So the ISM is a more of a trading than economic event because the correlation with GDP is not what it used to be 20 years ago. So it's one for you guys. So the claims, I mean, this is a quiet week, and claims could very well turn out the more interesting event. What was interesting in the data this morning, employment data, we're starting to see a contraction in government employment, small one, but it could be that the layoff that have been, discussed, talked about for such a long time are finally impacting employment, so they could show up in claims. Not sure. But this is a quiet data week. What will be perhaps more interesting is the Fed speakers next week. So especially the hawks, like for instance, President St. Louis President Mooselem. I always pay a lot of attention because he's an economist like me, so he speaks a language I can understand. It will be interesting to get his take on the data, and I think he's going to be more dovish than people expect. In fact, before the FOMC, again, if you read what he actually said, he mentioned the downside risk to the labor market. So he's probably going to feel vindicated by the data. We'll also have Governor Bowman speaking, but she already explained her dissent and the dissent, by the way, for both Waller and Bowman. It's not on the substance. Everybody agrees on the downside risk to the labor market. It's on whether the Fed should have cut now this week rather than 6 weeks down the road, which, quite frankly, is a value. I mean, it's a judgment. There is no scientific, no AI. Well, AI is probably going to tell you whether you should have cut this week or next week, but you probably don't want to listen to that.
And is there anything else for next week or the next couple of weeks that you're watching out for? Is it practically we're now just watching out for confirmation in the story? So the next release of CPI, the next release of NFP, and then we're just watching for basically the speakers to confirm that they're probably moving a bit more on the side of Waller and Bowman, i.e. the cuts are right, and that September's now the right time, i.e. the next meeting's right.
Yeah, and I would add retail sales to that, which is kind of an advanced data on consumption. But that's about it, really.
Amazing. Thanks for that, Dominique. And thank you, everyone, for watching. This has been Macro Hacks Week Ahead. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.